When Vinay Patel addressed the Oval House Theatre on the evening of the 4th of July 2016, surely the last thing the audience expected was for him to drop his trousers.
Good evening, everyone.
And yet, as you will know, upon reaching the climax of his performance, this is precisely what happened. My name is Vinay, and Vinay has asked me to speak for him tonight about himself and where he's from. He's asked me to do this for several reasons, but mostly because he feels the way he currently presents himself doesn't suggest his past, and he's worried that in looking back, my part of him will fade from the story, and it's important shit, like how I'm good at French. Like, really good. That I know my music, that I play in a band, that I see my mates from home. But he don't do any of that anymore, because he spends all his time at short play nights where everyone is beautiful and talented and every third person is the kid of someone rich and or famous, which he apparently finds problematic, but I think sounds really cool. I gather he was going through a difficult period, both with his relationship to the arts and himself. Some have seen the dropping of the trousers as a provocation, a reminder that our craft lives in its liveness and its daring. Others, of course, have been keen to insist that it merely foreshadowed the tragedy to come. In fact, he's not even sure this is the right voice now doing the speaking. He's watched loads of YouTube videos, right, to check what he must have sounded like in the early 2000s, but it's still a bit put on, and whilst he was YouTubing, he recalled that his dad made him go elocution lessons for a bit when he was in primary school. Perhaps because no one in his family sounds particularly well-spoken, and his dad figured, it will help you get on in this world, my son, like he was some sort of chubby Asian Dickens. Turns out, there's a lot about himself that Vinay's forgotten.
Indeed, since Vinay's passing, many have speculated on his admittedly bizarre death. The local papers have somewhat made a game of it. I will say right away that in this biography, / memoir, I'm not going to indulge those questions. Rather, when I speak of him, I'd like to focus on his life. His loves. The facts.
Right! So, he was technically born and raised in southeast London. But for secondary school, he went outside, boo hiss, literally just outside to his town called Dartford. Dartford! We make some great mates. Smart, equally bullied, and whose idea of a good time is taking a photo of their asses? It's just what we do around here. The boys all take a photo of their arse. Such a great word, arse. We take a photo, then mix them up, and you have to guess whose arse is whose. Well, I say we. Vinay never risks it. He's too chicken, but he dresses it up to be about how he's the only brown kid in the group, and so it'll be very obvious whose arse is his. Which, to be fair, does make sense. He also joins the school choir because he's like that, and Mr. Royal, the coiffured, stereophonics-loving, Mazda-driving hero that ran it, asks, what's with that fancy accent? So Vinay let it loosen up. Lets Dartford into his soul, which is how you get me. Now, that accent shift is tricky to understand, so in a way you lot will get. It's the difference between this place, this space having two syllables, theatre, and three syllables. Theatre is what he was first known for, but it was not his first love, perhaps because his home borough of Bexley is one of only two in London to not have a permanent building. I sometimes wonder what would have become of his nascent interest in the stage if this hadn't been the case. Perhaps he would have written more plays. Certainly, they would have been better. His first love was a girl called Sarah. She's married now, I'm told. Good for her. I mean, at this moment in time, we're still going out, so it's a bit weird to hear that. But nice to know she'll be happy one day. Apparently everyone Vinay's ever loved is married now, which is awkward. But that's alright, yeah. If he's lucky, he'll meet a nice girl someday. And in fact, the reason I'm talking about love at all is precisely because 30-year-old Vinay reckons he left his ability to accept affection and to give it back. He thinks he left that somewhere behind with me, and he doesn't think he can truthfully talk about where he's from without a person who knows what love feels like guiding it. It's like, if I can do that, if I can trace his steps back through the London I know, he might have a shot at a future in the London he knows. Which, I'm just saying, is a lot of pressure for him to put on me. Especially since the London I'm from doesn't exist anymore, does it? In all London, the city's all about turning land into money. That city's a fiction to me. My London, the IMAX's till recently a cardboard city, the Astoria, my favourite gig venue, It's for venting the frustration of youth, not the fumes of Crosswell.
There's no fucking cable car or London Overground, and Peckham is actually shit, not fashionably shit, and...
Maybe that's... You know, that's maybe that's just what a city is, though, yeah? Unmoored, overwritten, replaced. Living. And, like, being from somewhere is kind of the same, isn't it? It's a place, a time, a people, leaving such a mark on you that it changes who you are. The time you're there don't matter. It being where you grew up don't matter. I am potentially from every room I've ever given myself to, including one day this one. And you know what? Maybe the reason Vinay can't love anymore is simply because he's just become a self-involved prick. Holding on too much. Hell, he can't even leave me behind, and that's just...
So what happened to Vinay after, as I've come to call it, the night of the arse?
Did you hear that?
After all, it was the immediate move from London down to Ashburton, near to Exeter, just on the moor, that would come to define his life more than any other.
Sorry, you're hearing this, this lady.
It was here that he formally gave up the plays in order to foster one of the two great passions of his remaining life, becoming a tour guide. That's not a misprint, it's not T-O-U-R, but rather T-O-R, as in Big Rocks. He became a guide and historian of big rocks that have specific names, and it is, of course, these writings for which he is best known today.
Really? Jesus Christ.
And the other passion was, and I hope this doesn't sound too cheesy, but it's only, as he put it, every morning, the other great passion was us.
What?
Back then, I wasn't yet an artistic director, of course. I was an eager young lighting designer of all things, recently graduated from a master's, having left behind a potentially lucrative career in document scanning. My mother was particularly upset about that decision and was happy to let me know that whenever I came home to Chesterfield for Christmas, which was the only time I felt absolutely obliged to do so. I guess I was still hoping to find a life in what I loved. It didn't seem unreasonable then. Nothing does when you're still open to the whims of the world.
You know what? I'm just gonna...
I adored the Big Smoke, which I had adopted as my home, but it had begun crushing me, to be honest, and one gymmed up evening I speculatively applied for a permanent role at the Northcote Theatre in Exeter. More a cry for help than anything, and I was stunned rather than delighted to find I'd been offered the position. More surprising still was how eager Vinay was for me to go and for him to come with me. I'd already taken him for a lifelong Londoner, but when he asked my permission to tag along, he made very clear that he didn't care what he did or how he made his life as long as he made it with me. Which, as you might imagine, was a bit much for a third date.
I need to... It's time to be from somewhere else, mate.
We discussed it at length during the second, more mutual detrousering, which occurred shortly before we squeezed into my single bed in Peckham Rye, which was not yet the bastion of the super rich that we know it as today. Rather, it was, appropriately for the evening, up and coming. You might even say it was betwixt these two very distinct abandonings of dignity that our love was forged. It saddens me now, of course, that he perished recreating that moment on our 35th wedding anniversary. Any deeper meaning to the act lost to the ages since that fateful day where he tripped on his pants and brained himself on the Arga? I'm going to leave you with a present. He never spoke much of his past, didn't think it was relevant. A parting gift. The closest I ever got to understanding were the first words he ever shared. I was there that night at Oval House, a last-minute impulsive decision to put off deciding on the Exeter job. The risk I never took. Most of the plays were wonderful, a real smorgasbord from some of the country's finest talents. His, on the other hand, was utter nonsense, the incoherent cod philosophical ramblings of what felt like a teenage boy, leavened only slightly by the partial nudity, which I quite enjoyed, and catching him at the bar after his performance, all I could think to ask is why he had even bothered doing what he did. Bon voyage, mon ami! He turned to me, and with an apologetic smile, he said, "That's just what we do around here."